It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting this morning's show. And we have three really top shelf guests if you're interested in talking about performance management. And for our regular listeners, if you're a federal employee, we're not talking at all about the performance management system that governs individual performance ratings. We're talking about big performance management, a trend, a calling that the government now has, the executive branch, to really measure its overall outcomes. And so with us to talk about performance management in the government, and of course, one of the biggest hits that they've had in recent years is the Data Act that got passed just a couple of weeks ago. We will certainly be talking about that. We have John Desenberg, who I like to think is my good friend.
Thank you, Deborah, and I feel the same.
Thank you. John is with the Performance Institute. He's the policy director there. And if you talk performance management, the Performance Institute's really always in the game on that. And we have with us in the studio, we're very fortunate to have Hudson Hollister of the Data Transparency Coalition. He's the executive director and the founder of the Data Transparency Coalition. And, you know, I'd like to say that they were the primary force behind getting the Data Act passed. Hudson, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Deborah. Exciting to be here and talk about my favorite subject.
Data?
That's right.
Right? Data transparency. And we have speaking with us for the whole show by phone this morning, Bethany Blakely. She's with the Performance Improvement Council. And Bethany, you're with us, right?
I am.
And Bethany is our, she's our federal government employee inside the government view of performance management. And so I thought we'd go around the table, starting with John, and let our listeners know a little bit about who each of you are, what each of your organizations really do in the world of performance management, and how each of you personally got interested in this topic. It feels, when I read about the topic from the outside, I always say to John, it feels very philosophical and esoteric and hard to grab your, you know, hands around. And then you start talking to people like John, and all of a sudden it feels incredibly manageable.
Well, we tell real stories, Deborah. You know, and I agree with you. If you read these textbooks and go to these classes sometimes, especially at the universities, these professors talk about it in a very abstract way. But I think Hudson and Bethany would agree. Once you're working with agencies and can actually help them reprioritize their work, stop doing things that aren't adding value, and really start to focus their energies on things that are really creating results, it goes from textbook theory to reality and impact, and it becomes very real. And of course, that's why I'm interested in it, because we've really helped people, and people are thankful, and it's growing because of the successes. And, you know, I still think of myself sometimes as a federal employee. I was at GSA for 15 years. I ended up as director of performance management under the second President Bush, who was very interested in this. And it just kept growing and growing. And 10 years ago, it's been 10 years, I was approached by the Institute to come on board as the policy director and do what I did at GSA, but at a much bigger scale. Yeah. And we're working not just with the federal government now, but with countries around the world, including places like Indonesia and Italy and Spain. And even China has come to our training center here downtown for help. This is an international movement way beyond just the United States. Canada's very involved. In England, we're working with state and local governments. I could talk to you about that sometime. It's just a very exciting place to be.
Yeah, it is. What it tells you is if you look at, you know, federal, state, local, international governments, organizations sort of focusing on this concept of, you know, how do we get better results with what we have? It tells you something about where maybe we've all gotten to, you know, that they're all focused on it. But that's, we're going to kick that can down to towards the back end of the show, because as I said, you know, the Data Act, I think, is really fascinating. And we're very fortunate to have with us Hudson Hollister of the Data Transparency Coalition. And you also, you were in government before you were at DTC. I'm going to go DTC.
That's right. Well, we don't usually use the acronym because we don't want to be confused with the Depository Trust Corporation.
But that's
in financial regulation. So I'm fine with calling it the DTC for the purposes of this show, talking about federal performance. Yes, I've been a civil servant before. I used to work for the Securities and Exchange Commission, actually. And the SEC adopted, this is the common theme, the SEC adopted a data format for corporate financial statements with the goal of making them searchable and easily interoperable. And frankly, they didn't do it right. So I resigned from the SEC, went to work for Congress to try to pass legislation that would require financial regulators to transform documents into data. That's where the idea for the Data Act came about, too. The leadership of Chairman Issa and Earl Devaney, who ran the Recovery Board, right, is behind the idea for turning federal spending from documents into data. I resigned from Chairman Issa's staff in 2012 to start the Data Transparency Coalition, and our job is to bring the voice of industry for that same transformation from documents into open data. The companies of the Data Transparency Coalition believe that government should express its information as machine-readable data, that this transformation from documents to data will be good for the public sector and the private sector and democracy. Yeah. And our first victory is the passage of the Data Act.
It's huge, and I definitely want to dig into that in a moment. Bethany, you're with the Performance Improvement Council. Tell us a little bit about what got you interested in performance management, what you do over at the council, and what the council's doing.
Absolutely. I think I've always been a performance person before that title was ever established. I remember back, I was probably 11 or 12 years old, I used to keep my own baseball stats. And not in the traditional way, the way stats are officially kept. I created my own data collection system and listened on the radio.
You and Hudson.
Ridiculous. 11-year-old girl spent her entire summer keeping stats. And because I was fascinated by finding the patterns of pitches and different weather conditions and different field conditions. I loved being able to try to predict how the batter would do or how the pitcher would pitch. My first real job doing anything performance related was probably with the city of Pittsburgh. We were essentially community organizers, but from the inside, which is, I think, why I had ended up in the federal government doing the same thing. But the neighborhoods are very powerful in Pittsburgh, and we did two rounds of neighborhood strategy meetings. We literally went to every single neighborhood in the city of Pittsburgh and asked them, what are your priorities? What is not working for you? How can we change it? How can we connect you with the city department to change the way we're delivering services so that everybody wins? I ended up building this massive database with and layered in all kinds of information, worked with the city planning office to layer in GIS information, and it ended up being the basis for completely redesigning the Mayor's Service Center, which they are still using today. So always been a bit of a data geek. Unfortunately, I came into federal service. I came in through the Presidential Management Intern Program at that time, now Fellows Program.
Right.
And I had a variety of positions, and now all of a sudden they know that there is this firm called performance management, and this is a profession, and hey, I think I'm in it now. Surprisingly,
a little girl's dream comes true.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Surprisingly, in federal service, though, no one ever asked me to do anything with data.
Well, they will now.
I'm a little rusty now, I have to admit. But it was in multiple departments at the program level, at the component level, and the department level, and kind of realized I'm a macro level thinker, so it's really great to be here at the Performance Improvement Council, where we work with all the agencies at all levels to try to promote the practices of performance management. So the council is officially a council of the 24 performance improvement officers from the 24 CFO Act agencies. We are lovingly known as the PIC, But I'd like to think of a C in the pick as community instead of council, because we really work with everybody, folks at the staff level primarily, who are doing performance all day, every day.
And Bethany, well, each one of you have websites, and so I'm sure we don't need to give out. In the old days, you had to give out the website address because Google...
http://.
Right, because Google, you know, really didn't exist. But now, you know, each one of you has a very interesting website, and I know our listeners will be multitasking and going on the websites as they listen. Bethany, hang in there with us. We have to take the first commercial break for our show. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. Joining me on today's show, which is Performance Management in the Federal Government, is John Desenberg from the Performance Institute. Bethany Blakely's with us by phone, a little staticky Bethany on your cell phone, from the Performance Improvement Council. And we have Hudson Hollister, who's the Executive Director of the Data Transparency Coalition. And I want to start back from the break with Hudson, because if you're in the federal community in the last 3 or 4 weeks, you really could not have missed this piece of news, and that was the passage of the Data Act. Has the president signed it yet,
That's
Hudson?
Right. President Obama signed the Data Act on May 9th.
He did.
That's
so he
right.
signed it, because it passed like April 28th or 4th or something
Good
like that.
Good memory. Yeah. April 28th was the final passage in the House.
Yeah. And president signed it, so now it's law. We all remember how bills become laws. And as I said, if you missed it at the beginning of the show, I really do think that, especially, I mean, maybe just because I read your website, where, you know, Hudson's counsel was really instrumental in getting this act passed. Tell us what the act does.
That's the great place to start. Yes. The Data Act is the nation's...
I think it's hugely transformative.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. It all is going to depend on implementation. The Data Act is the nation's first open data law. In fact, it's the first open data law that I know of anywhere in the world. Open data means government information should be accessible. And we usually oversimplify open data to two basic steps: standardize plus publish. Government should adopt consistent data formats and fields for its information. And I'll get into what the Data Act means for federal spending. And government should publish it, should make it available to the people who are entitled to it. That means that citizens should have immediate access to whatever is public, whatever might be revealed in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. But beyond that, inspectors general, program managers, agency leaders, Treasury and OMB, congressional appropriators should have access to the information they're entitled to. So it's not just publishing everything for the public. It's the whole structure of federal information should be delivered to those who need it.
Right. And the Data Act focuses, though, on a category of information.
Just spending.
Spending money.
That's right.
Yeah.
We've got plans in the other areas.
I know. So, but tell, why'd you start there?
We started with spending because that's what's for dinner. There is nothing more central to what government does, to its values, to its priorities, to its operations, than the flow of money.
Yeah.
There's also nothing more central.
Well, the flow of money from its citizens.
That's right. From
the taxpayers. Into the Treasury, into the hands of Congress, and back out.
That's right. And as we all know, the flow, there's nothing more complicated. There's been no organization as large or as complicated in human history than the U.S. federal government. Unsurprisingly, the flow of money is really complicated. It goes through all these stages, from congressional appropriation to Treasury allocation to agency obligation to the final award to the subaward, and I'm leaving some stages out. because it goes through so many stages, spending's really difficult to track.
Right.
The people who are entitled to see that information, whether taxpayers or program managers, inspectors general, have a really hard time getting the information that they need to make informed decisions.
And I want to talk more about all of that data and how it currently resides and where you see it going. But my question to John and Bethany is maybe this. Isn't it just phenomenal that you need an outside force like Hudson's organization to bring that point back to the federal government, both branches of government, right? Both. It's like taxpayer money. It's our money, citizens' money. And up until this act, which obviously isn't implemented yet, you really as a citizen can't track how government spends its money.
That's
where?
Right.
In detail.
That's right.
And I'm curious about that. Like, why is it that government on its own isn't seeing that issue?
That's right. You know, sometimes you need an outside perspective or an inside-outside. And I wanted to congratulate Hudson because, my gosh, you had a bill become law, just like we all learned about in school. But it's such a rare event
these
days. I
know. I wanted to give him a big mazel tov.
It's like a once-a-year event that we actually have the president sign law. And, I mean, that is pathetic, absolutely pathetic. But let me get to my main point, which is that the Performance Institute is partnering with Hudson and his group on this issue for one clear reason. That's because our work at the Performance Institute on the Government Performance and Results Act and the Modernization Act, it has not affected bottom line spending in the way it should be. It has not affected the way people are prioritizing and allocating resources. And so when I hear about the Data Act and when we've spoken in the past, and even when I had a chance to speak to Earl Devaney about the RAP board, what we all have come to the conclusion with is we're coming to this same target from opposite sides. Spending, measurement, we've got to bring those pieces together. Mm-hmm. They're disconnected today. People are measuring.
How has it got so disconnected for so long?
Well, measurement was considered a check-the-box exercise,
yes.
Deborah. It was check the box, we're measuring something, now leave us alone, and we're going to go back to spending the money the way we've always spent it. And, you know, by the way, Congress has been notorious for ignoring performance measurement. They don't care about the data. They just want the money to flow where they want it to flow. Results be damned. Outcomes be damned. We're going to spend the money where we want to spend the money.
Right. Well,
and
they're spending money. Right. And they spend money for political reasons inside the executive branch. It's not that they want a hands off, but they once they get the money, it's like, leave us alone. We know what we're doing. We know how to get it done. And like the taxpayer feels, Hudson, very cut out of the process. It's our money. And when I read on your website, when I read what the bill does, and then there's a chart about what's not going on now, right?
That's right.
And what will the Data Act do? I was like, oh my God, wait until the thousands of, you know, geeky, wonky, you know, American citizens get their hands on that data.
Yeah.
Because it could transform our government.
That's right. And people can find that summary on datacoalition.org. I can explain why the data standards are so important because, like I said, the Data Act is about two steps, standardize plus publish. That first step is for Treasury and OMB to figure out government-wide fields and formats for spending data. Now, that's awfully abstract, but I can tell you a story to explain what it means. When I worked for Congress, I called OMB, the GAO, and the Congressional Research Service.
Yeah, CRS.
To ask how many agencies we had. I got three different answers. We don't know how many because it's nobody's job to track that. It's nobody's job to figure out an electronic identifier for all the agencies, much less all the programs, which would be really valuable to John, much less all the grantees and contractors. These concepts that are the same or almost the same across agencies, there's no
same
one
enough.
Whose job it's same enough. That's right. There's nobody whose job it is to track all this. And if we aren't tracking—
Not even in Congress, the appropriators?
The appropriators, well, they've got their list, but it doesn't match GAO's list. It doesn't match OMB's list. There's nobody in charge of data standards. That's what the Data Act seeks to change.
So when you say standardized information, tell our listeners what that means.
It means common. Yeah, that's right. It's awfully abstract. And there's, I think it's never going to be a big, sexy political topic, but it's very, very important for management and performance. It should be somebody's job to figure out common electronic identifiers or data fields for agencies, for programs, for accounts, for grantees and contractors, and for those same identifiers to be used wherever they're relevant, across the whole magnificently complicated landscape of reporting. When I say reporting, here's what we're talking about. Agencies report their financial account balances to Treasury. They report their their budget actions to OMB. They report their performance to Congress. They report their grants and contracts to USAspending.gov, to GSA. All those reporting requirements were set up by Congress in its great wisdom over the decades, and they're all distinct and separate from each other. You can't take information from one of those reporting requirements and relate it to information from the others.
Well, you know, Deborah, real quick story. The Fish and Wildlife Service, a very rare positive example, they're able to tell you how much it costs to clean a mile of river in this country. They are able to tell you down to the penny how much it costs. Now, the reason that they've been able to do that is because they did just what Hudson's talking about.
Standards.
They tagged their data. They tagged where people are spending their time and where they're spending their money, funneled it towards a real result, cleaning rivers, and now they're able to tell us. But that is a very, very rare exception.
Mm-hmm. And what drove them there? You know, you have to wonder, like, in an organization like Fish and Wildlife and something so hard to, like, grab your hands on, a river, a mile of river that they were responsible, like, what drives a group of federal employees, bureaucrats, to think about that?
Well, you know, at one time, Deborah, not that long ago, under a previous administration, what was called activity-based costing was very popular, which is we need to know why you're spending this money and where it's going. But unfortunately, for a lot of the reasons that Hudson's talking about, a lot of the technical reasons and other reasons, it fell by the wayside. It's just too difficult to do.
That technical reason is why the Data Act was necessary. It was nobody's job, like I said before, nobody's job to figure out these data standards. Nobody, and no one had the authority to impose them across all these reporting requirements. Mm-hmm.
So, Bethany, I want to bring you into the conversation. You know, you sit sort of at the top here, you know, inside the executive branch and the council. I really think the Data Act could be so transformative, not just on how its citizens relate to its government on spending tax dollars. I think it'd be very transformative to the democracy. And Hudson, I read that on your website, and I saw that before I even read it. I really think it could be transformative. But Bethany, what's your view of what this act could be? Is it the beginning of something grander?
I hope so. And I think it depends on how people interpret it and how it's going to be implemented. If it is seen as yet another set of requirements, it's going to be given to a group of people to check as many boxes as they can to say that they have met the letter of the law. And it's the same problem we have in more generally in performance management. That's not really the right way to approach it. You want people to want the data because it's useful to them. It can't be about compliance and requirements. And I realize that you sometimes have to have that as the motivator to get it started. But if you approach it at a more personal level, as something that's useful at the program level, then it will grow. And programs can start to think of external organizations as people who can assist them in doing all the data analysis that they don't have the staff and resources to do right now. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why we don't have as much as we need. There's lots of data. We're sitting on lots of data.
Yeah, I keep reading that, Bethany. That I keep reading that very point, that there's so much data, and I've heard John talk about it. You know, we got the data. We're not just real. We don't have capacity to deal with it.
Right. Capacity, motivation, interest. So when you make it available to external groups who have the time and the motivation and the interest, because it's just information. Good people will do good things with it. Bad people will do bad things with it. And we need to stop thinking that we need to control that. It's just information. And we can
use it
as partners as opposed to feeling like we have to have our own power and control over it as if information is power. It's only powerful when you give it away.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to tell you something, Bethany. Your two colleagues here in the studio were shaking their head with, you know, in agreement
whole
time.
A yes shake, not a no shake.
In affirmative, in total agreement with you on all the points you just made. Hudson, you specifically, you know, thought that one of the points she made was a powerful notion. What do you mean by that?
Well, Bethany explains that information is most powerful when you give it away. That's very true, and I think is most true now when technology has brought us to the point where if you have data, the standardized data that is ready to use, anybody can direct their energies to it. Anybody can find insights in it. And if you have the data standards, which I keep saying, but I'm going to keep saying it, is totally crucial. If you have the data standards, then insights can be built on top of insights, and we can create real wisdom about federal spending, about performance, about spending plus performance. But it requires the data to be standardized and then published.
You know, Deb, real quick, the local example on this is so powerful. I had a chance to sit down with the City of Chicago's CIO recently. They opened up the city's data, and they let these 20 and 30-somethings all around Chicago start building apps for free.
And probably teenagers, too.
And unbelievable. Now you can find parking spots, and you know where the city tickets and where they don't. And you can find potholes, and you can avoid roads with potholes. And you know where the garbage is getting picked up and where it's not. All done completely for free on people's phones by these people because they've set the data free.
Because they've set the data free, and they standardized and made it available in a way, in a format that is accessible.
That's power, like Bethany pointed out. That's power that didn't exist before.
Yeah, no, I think, I do. I really think the whole thing is at the beginning of something potentially, I agree with Bethany, potentially transformative. We have to take our mid-show break. When we come back, we're going to finish up talking about the Data Act, the disclosure component, and then we're going to talk about the problems and successes in performance management government-wide. You are listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Geico's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from Geico. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact Geico today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal manager, you deal with a lot of information. Here's a tip on breaking through the noise. Join the Federal Managers Association to have a voice on Capitol Hill. And to get filtered news and information specific to managing your workforce, join the 50,000 other federal managers who already subscribe and read the free weekly e-report, fedmanager.com. I'm Todd Wells, Executive Director of the Federal Managers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting this morning's show. We're talking about performance management in the federal government. Of course, you can't talk today about performance management in the federal government without talking about the passage of the Data Act. Joining us to do that is John Desenberg. He's the policy director at the Performance Institute. We have Bethany Blakely with us. She's from the Performance Improvement Council. And we also have Hudson Hollister, who we've been talking with for most of the last segment, because his organization, the Data Transparency Coalition, I think was just sort of the primary force, and Hudson agrees with me, was the primary force between the passage of the Data Act.
I didn't agree on the record.
Well, I know you agree with me. Your organization and you personally, it's amazing, have been really instrumental in the passage of this act. And as Bethany had pointed out, and I know the two of you had said this to me privately, it's great until, you know, you see it implemented. And so, you know, we're on the edge of implementation.
That's our next challenge.
Yeah. But can you close the loop for us, Hudson? You said there's two pieces to it. There's standardizing information so that it can, so that it all looks the same, so that all these different pieces of information can be related back to each other. And then you said the other part's disclosure.
That's right. Open data is about two steps. First, standardize, and second, publish. In the last segment, we talked about standardization. We need to have common data elements across the government for some of these common concepts. Now let's talk about the disclosure piece. The law requires Treasury and OMB to create the data standards, and then 3 and 4 years in, agencies must start reporting their information consistent with those data standards to make the whole thing searchable. Then Treasury and OMB expand the existing USAspending.gov website to include much more detail and a broader scope than exists today. Right now, USAspending.gov, which was set up because of President Obama's leadership, he sponsored the law in 2006 that set up USAspending.gov. It was a good start. USAspending.gov includes a summary of each grant and a summary of each contract. but it doesn't give you any information about internal spending. It just covers the
external big ticket item.
That's right.
Right.
It's
where
about
all the
one
money
third.
Is.
It doesn't give you internal spending. It also doesn't give you more detail about the grants and contracts, and you can't match things together. So you couldn't take a particular federal program and see its grants, its contracts, and its external spending. Or, I'm sorry, and its internal spending.
So no tagging, basically.
That's right. That's right. It also, right now, it isn't searchable. For instance, one of my favorite examples is you look up the top 100 grantees from the Department of Housing and Urban Development for fiscal year 2010. Awfully specific, but it's the one that I know. And the New York City Housing Authority, spelled three different ways, appears three times in that list of the top 100. That's because we don't have tagging, because we don't have a consistent identifier for the recipients of federal grants. So even though I'm talking about publication, you see how I keep getting back to data standards. It should be somebody's job to do that. Setting the data standards is crucial.
Mm-hmm. And then this disclosure piece, it's a mandatory disclosure, you know. You know, I want to say in the old days, whatever that means, you didn't get that information unless, you know, you filed a FOIA request.
You have to know which FOIA request to file.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, good luck today filing a FOIA request from the government for particularly financial spending information. It's just so cumbersome. Everything's cumbersome. What I find really just isn't, you know, as a citizen, rewarding is that I don't have to ask for it. You have to disclose
it. It should be affirmatively published. And that's what the Data Act requires. USAspending.gov expands, and it includes the whole corpus of executive branch spending information. We got to keep working on legislative and judicial. Just a plug for that. We'll keep working on that. The whole corpus of executive branch information, fully searchable by appropriation, mm-hmm. by object class, by program activity. You'll be able to relate the information on a particular grantee or a particular contractor or a particular award to all the other information relevant to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I was talking to Earl Devaney about this because this is built on kind of the concept behind the Recovery Act.
Yes.
The Recovery Act, Congress would not accept the Recovery Act unless they had very transparent tools in place to track the money. They were very concerned about fraud. They were very concerned about waste. And these kind of tools are very good at that kind of transparency. The one thing that Mr. Devaney and I agreed upon, though, is that outcome measurement. So, for instance, how many jobs were created from the Recovery Act? That's the kind of thing that these tools really don't help you with, because that is more of a performance issue, not a spending
issue.
Well,
that's interesting, John, because I was going to go there. I'm like, let's talk to the performance guy now. Hudson's giving you the data. He's made it his life crusade, and he so far he's accomplished it. We'll see, as Bethany points out, like, will we actually get it? But assuming the data, we get the data and we get it standardized and it gets disclosed, what's everybody going to do with it? How does it improve? Isn't that why we're all here? How does it improve government?
We're slowly moving the puzzle pieces together. You know, we had our government performance summit this month, and Hudson was kind enough to speak there and got a great response from the audience at the government performance summit. But our theme this year has been about puzzle pieces. The Data Act is a puzzle piece. GPRA, Government Performance and Results Act, is a puzzle piece. We have got to start moving these things together, because if they're separated, all we can track is individual pieces. And what really is required now is to say, okay, we spent $1 million, but what did we get for the $1 million? And by the way, which grant or which contract was the most effective in the results that we were looking for? So, for instance, if we're trying to end homelessness, which is a big initiative from this administration, which of the many government programs going to end homelessness is the most effective? Where is the bang for the buck? Where is the return on taxpayers' investment? That's the next step, bringing these pieces together so we can go from tracking spending and tracking measures to finally figuring out what are we getting for our money and who is really successful.
Right. That way you've said that is not how government has ever thinks. It's very bottom line. You're talking very bottom line driven. Am I spending money in a way that produces the results I want? And if I rearrange how I spend money, how will it affect the results I get? That's never a conversation. Like, the president and his management council is like, I want the government to work more like a corporation. Okay, what are you going to do about that?
Standards.
You know, and in many ways, you know, I'm against that in many ways, because the government isn't a corporation. It's a government. And so there are things that government does that don't necessarily, you know, you want measured in dollars and cents.
Well, no one's talking about the government making a profit or anything like that. Yeah. We just want to see the money go to a good end, and I think we can all agree on that.
Right, right. And but it's very, but it still feels very bottom line driven, and it's not usually. That's a conversation that maybe we haven't been having because they haven't had the means to get there. And now, with all of this data being available, right? People didn't have this data available. And as Hudson's pointing out, three different parts of the appropriation and spending process couldn't together come up with the same list of where all the money goes. That's kind of scary.
Well, you know, I would recommend to everyone David Brooks's column this week in the New York Times, where he says that Congress only has one performance measure, which is, are they going to get reelected in the next 2 years? And they are so bad at strategy. The government, the way we've set up things at this point, we're very bad at long-term thinking. And I'm curious to hear what other people, Bethany, your thoughts as well. Why are we so tactical short-term and we just can't think strategically?
Of course, well, Bethany, you know, your council is designed to be the opposite, right?
Correct. We definitely have some things in place that they're going to be very long-term investments that we're trying to make in federal workforce, inside the performance profession itself, but for the most part outside the performance profession, because performance is everyone's job. We can't just focus on the list of requirements, the list of reports, the list of plans that have to be done by that very small group of people who are responsible for doing them. So it does have to go back to what the programs get out of all of these performance practices. So we're designing some programs and piloting some things right now that really get at the bulk of federal employees so that we can start to demystify this thing we call performance management. It's very overwhelming to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Most people didn't go to school for it. They haven't taken courses in statistics. They don't know what to do with all of that data. They don't have big BI systems to handle it. And they've been given tasks that are truly task-oriented. Thus, the tactical element that we always have in strategy, you're right, is taken out of the mix in terms of daily management. So we have something called the Performance Enthusiast and Performance Ambassador Program, where we're just trying to get folks who have an interest in performance management kind of access to how to do it, what is it, when do you apply it, and let them realize that it's not as big and scary as you think if you bite off small chunks here and there.
Yeah.
And we're trying to almost create a cadre from the bottom up of folks who are going to drive the use of performance practices from the program level, in addition to the things that we have to do that are brought out by the Modernization Act. We also we did a soft launch this Wednesday of something we call the Performance Learning Center. And we're going to be rebuilding it through GSA as opposed to the vendor that we have right now. But it's a space where people can go and get information about goal setting and prioritization, planning, measurement, data and analysis, implementation and improvement, reporting and communicating performance information. Like, how do you access these tools and practices that we know about and that we love, but make them very accessible to folks? Mm-hmm. So if anybody's interested, it's plc.usalearning.net. It's a beta right now, but we're going to be redesigning it, so we're happy to take any feedback.
And Bethany, I think you're also accepting nominations for performance ambassadors. I was lucky enough and had the honor of teaching a group of these performance ambassadors. The PIC asked me to do that. They're bringing in some bright people from every agency around government for a six-month rotation as performance ambassadors.
Yeah, it's a great thing for folks. And we designed it so it's not competitive. No one has to pass any tests to be able to get into the program. They just have to have interest, and the supervisor has to say, yes, I support this. And then what they do is they choose a specific focus area, either goal setting and prioritization or planning or measurement. And they basically, on a part-time basis, get to just dig into materials that we've made available, that we bring them in for program days. They get to meet folks from other agencies, which is a huge thing that we need to do to break down these silos. And people, no matter what their experience level is with performance management, can learn something. So on a scale of 1 to 10, if they come in knowing very little about planning and they're at a level 2, their learning goal can be to get to a level 4 that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me, Bethany, of something John said before the show, which is, you know, you're really starting to build a profession of performance managers, which till recently, you know, we just didn't have.
That's right. And everyone's a performance manager.
I'm not sure we all know how to do it.
No. It's not a set of requirements. We, a couple years ago with OPM, went through a competencies development process. And we basically have 34 performance management competencies. What's core versus what's supplemental varies based on whether you're a staff analyst or if you're a performance improvement officer or if you're a goal leader, what we really refer to as program managers. But these are very basic skills that are pretty much applicable across the board. And so we're starting to develop some basic training, literally basic training, for folks to learn how to do that so that they can incorporate it into their daily work, regardless of what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that interests me is sort of from a very macro level to talk about some of the struggles and successes of performance management. And I think, Bethany, you probably have some insights into that from where you sit. But we do need to take the last break of our show. So we'll be back, Bethany, with you after the last commercial break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting this morning's show. We're talking about performance management in the federal government. And, of course, the big ticket item, if you follow performance management, the big ticket item, I think, in 2014 was the recent passage of the Data Act. So here to speak with us on that is Hudson Hollister of the Data Transparency Coalition. We also have with us by phone Bethany Blakely. She's with the Performance Improvement Council, who's running an ambassador program she just spoke about. If you're interested and have any interest in it, go to their website, see how to become part of that. And John Dessenberg, who's with the Performance Institute. And John, you know, I wanted to start with you on sort of like what are the hot issues or struggles, you know, successes, you know, what's current on the plate of performance management?
Well, I do think something very interesting happened.
Because
this
besides
week.
The Data Act, I think is the huge transformative.
Thanks for the plug.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's very interesting. This is more than one act or one law or even one branch of government. This is generational, which is there is a cry for transparency. You can see it in people's everyday activities. People tweet and people Facebook, and you know what people had for dinner.
I know,
and
it's
you know,
absurd.
It's too much, right? But everyone knows that there's been a real shift, and there was a very interesting article this week, Is Privacy Dead? What does that mean for all of us?
You know, that conversation's been going on now. It's ticking up, and I think the only generation that cares about it are the baby boomers and older.
Younger people expect access to data, useful data.
And they don't feel a sense of privacy. But that conversation's been, you see it if you read like things on the outer, you know, on the culture pages, right?
You get in an elevator. If you're Jay-Z and Beyonce in an elevator, guess what? You're not in a private elevator. That's going to be invisible to everyone on the planet tomorrow. And this is something that is very concerning for the intelligence community. And from a big macro picture,
yeah.
I had a chance to talk to General Keith Alexander, until recently the head of the NSA and the head of Cyber Command. So if anyone knows about keeping secrets and that, it's General Keith Alexander.
Like,
and
no now, transparency.
He is now left government, so he's able to talk to people about this. And so I had a chance to meet him, and I said, you know, General Alexander, this new generation of workers, they're not real into keeping secrets. They're into transparency. And you had what happened with Mr. Snowden, of course. But is this just the tip of an iceberg? Are we going to be able to continue to recruit and retain and have younger employees working in the intelligence community who are able to keep these secrets in the age of tweeting and Facebook, et cetera? And he said, you know what? This is a real concern. They send people, new employees are sent to more than 400 hours. 400 hours, that's 10 weeks of training.
On how to keep a secret.
On how to keep a secret, because NSA is so concerned that people, particularly under a certain age, come into the agency not knowing how to keep secrets.
And, you know, part of me reacts by saying, why do we have to keep some of it a secret? You know, when Snowden let the cat out of the bag, first of all, for many Americans, I don't know if you saw the Frontline piece a couple of weeks ago, how they treated knowledge of the program like it was the Holy Grail. I mean, they called it that, actually. But I don't think many Americans, if you asked them, would have said, oh, yeah, I don't think my government has the capacity or is listening or watching every email. And then there's a group of Americans who are like, sure they are. I mean, so it's like, is that really a secret? I don't know. Sometimes it's like 400 hours on how to keep a secret. What secrets? What is, you know?
Concerned about misuse of data. So, for instance, people looking in on their girlfriends and their boyfriends and, you know, that kind of thing. And also the kind of the Snowden issue, which is letting things go public.
I think the cultural shift that this issue illuminates, the cultural shift toward an expectation of transparency, I think it's most relevant when we talk about the vast majority of government information that is public. You could file a Freedom of Information request and get it. If you're a federal employee, if you're especially a younger federal employee, you expect to be able to have some kind of a dashboard where all the stuff your program is doing is visible to you, and it's not. That's what we're hoping to change, and that's, I think, the connection between spending and performance. Once the data is delivered to performance managers, they'll be able to use it. They'll be able to apply the skills that Bethany is teaching them.
Yeah, well, except they're going to use it internally. If I understand, John, what you're saying is they're concerned about the, you know, sort of the external disclosure of it.
Well, that's right. And of course, Hudson, you're absolutely correct. For most of what government does, it's completely public, and it should be. But there is a lot of money being spent on things that are in black books, off budget. There's millions of people with top secret clearances. And so, you know, as the generations move ahead, mm-hmm. and attitudes shift in this society culture, there's some real question marks about what's going to happen in those areas.
And you have to wonder, with 400 hours of training, are they going to be able to keep the genie in the bottle?
Yeah.
I think that's what they're concerned about.
Very concerned.
And because the younger generations... Hudson's right. It's like the teenagers too. I mean, they're your feeding ground for the next, you know, group of career generation. They don't get the whole it's a secret. They think what they had for breakfast or the last time they took a shower, you know, they think, why shouldn't everybody know that, you know?
Exactly.
And so you have to wonder if they get satisfied by getting access to large parts of information that get made public. Like, I'm starting to wonder, why do we need FOIA? Shouldn't there just be
affirmative publication?
Yes. Me and Hudson are in the same place. Like, why shouldn't they just, you know, like, for example, my law office, we just went to electronic data retention. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, you can't become paperless because there's no such thing as paperless. We're less paper. Right. And so every piece of paper that's created in the law firm or comes into the law firm is electronically inputted and saved electronically. Why isn't the government doing that? And then just one place where each agency is disclosing in a standardized way all information. Like, why do we have to ask for it anymore?
FOIA is really expensive for the government to hunt through, find files, process them, copy them, or scan them, and deliver them to the requestor.
Well, and then make decisions about whether or not you should have access.
I think we can all answer this question very clearly. People don't want things to be overly transparent, and not because they're hiding things, but because there is some acknowledgement that some spending is pointless.
Imagine
and it's one person's One person somewhere in Congress or the administration decided to spend money in a certain way, and they don't necessarily want a light cast on that.
Mm. Yeah. I do think, though, that this Data Act, which I keep coming back to, I really do think it's the beginning of something far more transformative. And with this affirmative disclosure requirement, it starts you getting you thinking, why do I have to ask for a copy of the contract that they have with Northrop Grumman to build that airplane? Why shouldn't it be on, you know, why shouldn't it be posted? Why, you know, and then and then you take access to information, John, and you move it to your arena, which is performance management.
Yes.
And it's like all of a sudden everybody's job gets a little easier. If the information's there.
You know, Hudson, I had a question for you, which is, have you found contractors or government vendors are on board with this, or would they prefer to keep things a little bit darker as well?
I think mostly they understand that their competitors are probably already filing those FOIA requests. There's a whole new industry, I think, to be built here, and it's not a compliance industry. The companies that support the Data Transparency Coalition are doing it out of self-interest as well as public interest. They believe that as government adopts consistent data standards and publishes the information, there will be new opportunities to republish it and make money off the advertising or subscriptions, to analyze it and deliver better value for less money to their existing federal clients.
You've got to love capitalism.
Or to replace layers of lawyers with lines of code, to automate all the reporting that goes on. I used to be a lawyer in a big law firm. I would prepare SEC filings and I had to copy paste things, and I was getting billed out for that. That shouldn't have been necessary. It should have been possible for the information to flow from my client all the way to the government agency. In the same way, for federal spending under the Data Act, the data standards make it possible to automate the submission of information from grantees, from contractors, from agencies, so we won't need to have people doing it. The standards make it possible to automate.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think there's an additional benefit to that. If you look at the timeline of when data gets created and captured and reported out, we're looking at things as if we're putting out the data after we own it, after we process it.
Yes.
And I think having this Data Act, and if we really go back to what happened with the recovery board, with the database there, which made all of this possible, because we knew that we could do things differently.
It showed that it was possible, yes.
You really think about the role of IGs. If they're more in the role of prevention instead of auditing after something has gone wrong, because if we do if the transparency happens at the point of data capture instead of after we already own it, we eliminate a lot of issues. Recovery board, we had so little fraud because the information was available at the data capture point.
Yes.
It's just, I know, I see Bethany, I think we're all sort of in the same place. It's just, you really feel like you're at the beginning of something very transformative in how government could be run better, you know, more efficient with this data, with the Data Act. And I'm really curious. I'm hoping the three of us can get together and talk about this in a year or maybe 18 months and really see what kind of progress we made. We have 1 minute, John. What's the one thing we haven't talked about in performance management that's out there that no one else is talking about?
Well, this is a related issue. I'm doing some work now with Medicare and Medicaid. And if anyone knows about fraud, it's those folks, unfortunately. And what are they doing? They've opened an office of innovation where they are figuring out, using data and using spending information, just like Hudson's talking about, they are figuring out the best ways to find those crooked doctors, to find the fraud, to figure out where money's being spent twice. And so they are starting to do what I think Hudson wants to see happen around government, which is use spending data to figure out how to improve things and to figure out where the money is flowing and to figure out new ways to stop these bad things from happening.
Right, and that's happening where?
That's at Medicare and Medicaid.
MedicareandMedicaid.com. Okay, so we have John Desenberg, Hudson Hollister, and Bethany Blakely, performance management experts. I'm calling you all experts. Thank you so much for joining our show.
Thanks, Deborah.
And really, I hope that the three of you will come back in about 18 months, and let's see what progress we've all made with the Data Act. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.
Okay, I'm serious.